Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Daniel Jr., Jim Osarski here with you. It is, man, we are almost to the end. It is end of the regular season.
I was going to say end of the regular season.
End of the regular season. Now that we officially know that there's going to be playoffs, we didn't really surmise this earlier in the year when they started 8-0 that maybe they might make the playoffs, but now it's official.
It is official. No one cares.
Yeah, no one cares. Absolutely, absolutely no one cares. So set the scene. We're going to try to not go off the rails, be too angry. We've been traveling and in and out of airports all day, so possibly a bit of frustration. But you know what? We care about you, the listener. This is what it is. We care about you. So here we are, even after a long day of travel and a slight bit of irritation, bringing you the BBP because there's lots to talk about. And we, you know what? You're going to be huddling up this week with your family. You know, there's some extended family. Everyone get together for Christmas, and you need to have all your information in order so you can have things to talk about with these people that you don't have anything else to talk about with.
Right.
All right. So we're here for you. We're looking out for you. Yeah. And awkward Christmas dinners everywhere.
It's a public service.
It really is. So let's set a little bit of a scene here for those who need it.
I still have two games up in the prediction game with two to play.
Oh, God. It's just so annoying. one minute and 35 seconds.
That's how we were scene setting.
Yeah, we were. Okay. That was not the scene that we were setting. Sorry. We could differ this week, though. I don't know. I haven't made a decision yet on where I'm going to fall on the Denver game. I got to really start digging deep in before I do. But I know where my gut is. But my gut often fluctuates. things can change.
Yeah. It's Clown Osweiler running the show there. The predictions at Cincinnati.com on Friday, but
did you see Clown Osweiler's second half line? 7 of 26?
It's been happening quite a bit.
They are a disaster in the second half of the game. Okay, hold on.
We're
going tangent. Let's focus here. Let's get this thing taken care of. All right, Bengals win in San Francisco, 24-14 in a game that wasn't really that close. Debut of AJ McCarron is a victory, not exactly the prettiest. You know what that game was? That game was the equivalent of Levi's Stadium. Okay, from the outside. Ugly, kind of weird looking. You're not really going to talk about the beauty of it. But on the inside, it had a lot of important substance that you got to have in order to be successful.
Right.
Which in this case, the Bengals just needed to find a way to win. And a lot of times, they had to win the way they had to win with defense and pretty much defense.
So in that case, because there was a strong media dining area, so you know, if we're talking about the substance, then the defense would be like that blueberry tart thing.
No,
that was really
good. Absolutely not. The substance, the defense, Carlos Dunlap was the Korean pork rib,
ooh,
which was the shining star of an already strong buffet across the board. That's what it is.
So then was Geno Atkins the tub of giant drumsticks?
Possibly. There's a pretty good chance. I mean,
what would you rather fight?
What would you rather
fight? A Geno Atkins-sized giant drumstick?
Giant drumstick.
Or 100 drumsticks-sized
Geno Atkins. Yeah. God, I love you, Reddit people. That is maybe the highlight of my year was that question on our Reddit Q&A.
Yeah.
I think this is a good week for us to bring back the Reddit Q&A, by the way.
Yeah, why not?
Hopefully no one's listening. No, yeah. Because I might have just given us more work for no reason. But we'll,
okay.
So let's get back to where we were with the Bengals winning. So they get the substance of the victory, what they needed. It accomplished everything they needed to do, getting out of San Francisco in an ugly game where they beat a bad team who's just bad. I mean, God, we've just seen the NFL's fill of bad football this year. I was kind of going through it today when I was looking at some of the defensive numbers as this defense is now at the point where there's a good chance they're going to set a franchise record for fewest points allowed in a 16-game season. And so much of that was just done against these types of teams.
Turkey bowl offenses.
So much turkey bowl being played against them this year. I mean, you look at it with the two games against Cleveland, the Rams, 49ers, Texas.
Yeah.
All these teams are in the bottom 10 offensively in the NFL, and the Bengals have just swatted them down.
Remember the narrative, the hard schedule.
Oh yeah,
Bengals and Steelers, hardest schedules. Maybe we can tell the powers that be that we're just not writing that story next year.
No, you know we are going to write that story. It's going to be called "Disregard Everyone Talking About the Hard Schedule" because it changes. It's a matter of it's not who you play; it's when you play them,
exactly.
and it's who's hurt. And in the case of San Francisco, if everyone quits. So the Bengals clinch a playoff berth and Denver folds in the second half at Pittsburgh. Denver goes up 27-10, ends up losing 34-27. We mentioned Brock Osweiler. I mean, they three games in a row now, they haven't scored in the second half. They're falling apart late in games.
And that defense, which was, you know, the bell cow all year. Antonio Brown, Antonio Brown's really good.
They have problems at safety right now. They have a ton of injuries at safety. Both their starters are down. A backup safety came in and played with a broken fibula yesterday on Sunday. I mean, they're messy right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 3-4 in the last seven games.
Yep. Offensive line issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's an outside chance that they end up the sixth seed.
There's an outside chance they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because I was plugging the playoff machine a little bit today, and if they lose their last two, there's a chance the Jets would need to upset the Patriots.
Right.
If the Jets upset the Patriots and Denver lost their last two, they could get left out. Completely. Now, is that likely? No. But is that completely far-fetched? I don't know.
Not
Jets
anymore.
Are at home. Denver's reeling. They got a Monday Night Football game against the Bengals is no cinch. And then the momentum and the pressure starts to build a little bit on you.
Especially if the Chiefs beat the Browns. Yeah.
So that's where it stands right now. So the scenario is pretty straightforward. A win on Monday Night Football means a first round bye in the playoffs, an AFC North title, and the Bengals have set them up almost as ideally as you can in a regular season,
right,
for their playoffs. And more than that, and here's why I want to get to something we'll talk about later, because I'm curious if this could be considered maybe the most important, maybe the most stakes, not food stakes, but like race stakes, most stakes on a regular season game in the Marvin Lewis era for the Bengals, because you're not only getting a bye, you're getting two byes, because then you can rest all these injured guys that are gritting through, as Marvin Lewis said on Monday, for the Baltimore game, and then another week off, and then you can bring them back in the second week with a home game against possibly a Denver again. There's just a lot on the line, but they can accomplish it all on Monday Night Football. Now, they got to do with a backup quarterback and a running game that ain't going nowhere.
Right.
So it's really interesting to try to figure out. They've got to find a way. It doesn't matter if it looks ugly. If it doesn't matter how it happens, they got to find a way to win in Denver on Monday night, or else your path is exponentially more difficult.
Well, and the interesting thing is, after that really, really poor showing by the offensive line and the running backs against a bad 49ers defense, you almost have to say A.J. McCarron's got to win you a game.
It kind of looks like that.
And he may have to win you a game without Tyler Eifert and with a hampered A.J. Green.
Yeah. Yeah, because let's...
So, good luck with that one, kid.
Yeah. Let's dive into... There's a lot to dive into here with this team and where they're at right now. Let's start with a couple of things you just mentioned. Let's start with the injuries. We'll give our feel on where all these guys stand. Let's start with the one on the positive side. Adam Jones.
Yes.
Returns on Sunday. And not only returns, but returns.
Yes.
A punt. Went back twice. Returns a punt. And when they were up, I mean, right, big in the second half. So we're all kind of thinking, what the hell is Pac-Man Jones doing back there? Returning the first punt in forever with his bad foot,
right,
in a game they have locked up. And I have a theory on this. Now, this has not been substantiated by anybody in the Bengals organization, so I know you probably come to us for legitimate information, but I do think this is a grounded theory. Pac-Man Jones might have to win you a game in Denver.
Yeah.
They're going to need a play, a dynamic play, to flip field position, to set up a score, to find other ways to get yards on offense. Yeah.
Which we saw Sunday with some turnovers.
Right.
But you're right, yeah.
They've got to, because you're not going to move the ball consistently against Denver. And you know what that means? That means Pac-Man returning punts. And he hasn't done it in how long? I think they just wanted to get him one, to get him back in the rhythm, and kind of...
Yeah, because the 49ers kicked it out of bounds on the first so time he ran
bounds.
Out there.
Not that's out of bounds. One hopper like into the stands for an 18-yard punt. Well done. So I that's my theory on that. I think they wanted him to get out there and test it and see how his foot responded to returning a punt, because they're going to want him back there in every situation where they typically use him, those plus 50 punts against Denver, because they got to find a way to manufacture a few points.
Yeah.
And how many times have we seen Adam Jones do that?
Yeah, and honestly, with the release of Chris Carter, with
Chris Carter picked up by the Ravens on Monday, by the way.
Of course. And because Intel will be so key in 2 weeks. But the reason I bring that up, and also with the Tyler Eifert injury, is because now you've got other guys active playing special teams. And Chris Carter, believe it or not, was a big part of that kick return mm-hmm. block team. Pretty solid. Adam Jones says, I looked for 51 and ran behind him. So, and how often do we see holds and block, long, even everyone's favorite Brandon Tate has had a lot of long returns called back. So I think your point is solid there, Paul, because it's honestly, they probably just needed the practice.
Yeah,
with him back there, and CJ Uzama and some of these guys having PJ Dawson getting
it's different blocking for him than it is blocking for anybody else, and guys need to kind of get a good taste of that.
Right, and then with Tyler Kroft seeing more snaps on offense as a starter, less, you don't really want him running around as he normally does. So yeah, I think that's was a legitimate. It's only one punt. They lined up for a second one. But there is something to that.
So, but I mean, this week is all going to be about finding other ways to scrape out a couple of points.
Right.
And that's going to be one of my things. So, speaking of the need to scrape out points, A.J. Green.
Yeah.
Shows up on the injury report on Saturday and hurt his back in practice out in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And showed up as probable. They had him listed as probable initially, and then on Sunday, minutes before the game, his status downgraded to questionable, but yet soon after he comes out and plays.
He started, yeah.
Not seeing the way that all came out and the way that all was put out by the Bengals was interesting.
Yeah, especially...
You don't see that.
No, especially because after the game, AJ told me, I woke up this morning and didn't think I could play.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really sound probable.
Not at all. And there is an advantage to the other team still thinking he's going to play.
Right.
You know, where he can go out there, and if you shift him to questionable just before the game, the opposing coaches and team don't know maybe how hurt he is.
Right.
And he is not viewed as a decoy. The possibility of him being a decoy isn't really in their heads as much.
Right.
So, interesting use of protocol there. Yeah. But so, anyway, the concern is that A.J. Green now has a back thing.
Right.
That he woke up and didn't know if he's going to be able to play, was able to go through it for a little while, but as soon as the Bengals got a quick lead, they sat him down.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's clearly is playing through something. So, yet again, let's add another superstar onto the list of people that could use 2 to 3 weeks off.
Right.
And it's all about finding a way to win in Denver. And we'll see what happens with AJ as the week goes on. The fact that he was able to play through it a bit on Sunday is encouraging for his status in Denver. And you got to imagine it's all hands on deck, treat it like a playoff game,
right?
Type thing. But
I'd be curious though to see how effective he is, because you know the long 37-yard pass was essentially a fly route. I mean, And I don't know, I mean, does he take that up the field and try to shed a tackle? I mean, the ball kind of was taking him out of bounds, but he really wasn't interested in fighting for that touchdown like we saw against Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just him and one other guy.
Yeah.
And then the play that ended his day that led to the Mike Nugent field goal, A.J. McCarron kind of threw the ball out of bounds, and A.J. was the intended target. And, you know, immediately, you know, on television, they see him sort of wincing. And it's like, well, there wasn't, he kind of slipped out there. I mean, that's not, it's, that could be an issue.
Yeah.
You know, because if he's only limited to certain routes or he's only comfortable doing certain things.
Yeah. And it ain't going to be against some slappy.
Okay. No, yeah.
You're talking about Chris Harris. I mean, you're going to be going up against one of the best cornerbacks in football.
Right.
And he's going to be pissed off after Antonio Brown just embarrassed him. Which does not happen. I mean, this guy has been one of the best corners in football, and people don't score on him, and he just gave up, what was it, 16 for 189 and 2 touchdowns? Yeah.
Chris Harrison, Aqib Talib, kind of not good.
Not good. I mean, well, they're the latest team to be to be beat up by this surging Pittsburgh offense, which is another topic we can get to. So we'll see. AJ, I'd imagine they'll limit him during the week, probably, and you know, maybe try to. We'll monitor that though for sure,
especially with the backup quarterback. Where the whole, I mean, you wrote this week or this past week, where it was all about how do you get timing with this new quarterback and these receivers. And
yes.
By the way, your number one target probably shouldn't practice, and then your 1A, or maybe for a backup QB, your tight end would be the number one target. Not practicing or playing at all either.
And we were talking about this the other day before the game, was it when we did our war rankings of the four players, if you look at the top four players that they could not afford to lose because they mean so much to this team, three of the four of them now. We got Andy Dalton, Tyler Eifert, 1-2, A.J. Green, 4, Geno Atkins is the third one, all dealing with stuff. And you're without Dalton and Eifert right now. Right. And Geno Atkins could be limited in Denver, obviously. He has the sickle cell trait. So that's a whole other story to get into. Tyler Eifert now. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
He's in concussion protocol. We don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes guys go get a concussion and they're gone for a week or less.
Right.
Sometimes they get a concussion and it's a month.
Yeah.
You just don't know. You go through the baseline tests. You do the tests. And there's a series of things you have to get cleared for.
Right.
He has not been cleared for anything yet.
No, but neither has Jake Fisher.
Neither has Jake Fisher.
So, yeah, concussions, that's the easy one with Tyler. And then plus,
We just don't know.
Yeah, we don't know if there's any residual to with the stinger issue that he suffered the week before.
Yeah, it could, because something that we were talking about was that how when he did get hit by Mike Mitchell, you see him grab his arm.
Yeah.
And that is a stinger reaction.
Yeah.
Because you feel numbness in your arm and all that stuff. And he's already had one. And so we don't know how much of that is also lingering in this.
Right.
You know, being in the concussion protocol is a cover for any of that, or it's all connected as well.
Right.
Regardless, it's a concerning situation, and we're, you know, a bit of a repeat of his rookie year where this happened at the end of the season and he dealt with a lot of stuff and was trying to fight through it.
Right.
And was not able to. But we'll, another thing that we'll monitor as we go. So that's where all the injuries stand. It's not ideal. I mean,
no, for a team that was the healthiest in the league for almost 10 weeks.
Now all of a sudden it's hitting them at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Which gets back to the original discussion, and it's all that matters. They got to find a way to win a tilt because it is so big for because they're if you got to go play even against a bad Baltimore team, all these guys have to practice all week.
Right.
They've got to go out there and get, because you've got to have all, because you cannot afford to lose to Baltimore. You're talking about losing the North. Now you're going on the road in the first round.
Right.
It's just they've got to take the pieces that they have and figure out a way to go do it. Now, that brings us to the next question. How the hell do they do that?
Honestly, the formula was laid out Sunday with Adam Jones' interception, Avantez Perfect interception,
mm-hmm.
Geno Atkins being a beast, Carlos Dunlap creating. I mean, Adam Jones should have a second interception. Actually, that, I mean, he'll tell anyone that, you know, the first third down conversion the 49ers got came off him not corralling a Blaine Gabbert pass, and mm-hmm. you know, so I that honestly, that's it.
Defense has to lift them.
They need a
mediocre offense,
right? They need to turn the Brock Osweiler second half stuff into a 60-minute thing. And I don't know if they can afford to give up the early touchdown like they did against Pittsburgh. Because, you know, while they couldn't go off the field against Pittsburgh, you know, again, we talked about they kind of limited the field goals, and that's why the Bengals were only down a score after A.J. McCarron came in and threw a touchdown A.J. Green. I don't know if they can afford that.
Yeah.
You know, to fall 7 down, 10 down. Especially because this running game is just so...
It's a mess.
I don't know what happened. That was so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I expected them to run for 200 yards because I just didn't... I thought, honestly, they would throw it a little more, but 1.8 yards a carry?
It's unbelievable. And against the team that comes in ranked 31st in the NFL in rush defense.
And they've done that all year. I mean, when mm-hmm. Cleveland was ranked down at Cleveland the bottom, when the Texans were ranked down. Yes. I mean, they haven't been able to do that against anybody. Really.
And we, you know, it had seemed the last two, really the 2 weeks before the Pittsburgh game, it seemed like Jeremy Hill was starting to get on track.
Right.
The offensive, you were starting to see it. It felt like maybe they were had figured that out. And the Pittsburgh game, you can give the excuse of, oh, well, they fell too far behind. They had to throw it. So is the excuse in this game they got too far ahead? So at what point are you allowed to run the ball successfully? You got to be just real close. You can't be too far behind or too far ahead. The bottom line is it just hasn't happened all year. It's been inconsistent all year, and it's been an issue. And now throw on top of it a question that we don't have an answer to and no one will get an answer to. Jeremy Hill is some sort of discipline.
Right.
Sits out the first quarter against the 49ers, and Giovanni Bernard starts. Jeremy Hill just stood behind Hugh Jackson the whole time. A number of different series came and went, and as soon as the second quarter started, Jeremy Hill came in. We asked Marvin, who said, and I quote, Giovanni Bernard was the starter.
Yeah.
Which was a fact. It was true. Asked Jeremy Hill. He said, you can ask Hugh and Marvin. Asked Giovanni Bernard. He said, I don't want to talk about it. Asked Hugh, and he said, that's between the coach and the coordinator and the player. So we don't know what happened. We just know no one wants to talk about it.
Right.
So whatever it was, it was.
Which it had to be something, because through all of this, Hugh Jackson every week has pounded his fist and said Jeremy Hill's our starter.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been.
He has been. This is the first time he hasn't been.
To me, Jeremy Hill irritated Hugh Jackson to the point in some fashion this week.
Yeah.
That he said, you know, you're going to stand next to me. for a quarter. And the problem was that Giovanni Bernard in the run game didn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, so it, you know, I don't know. It was, clearly at a loss. I'm just stunned. 1.9 yards per carry, 38 carries. I mean, I think I wrote that like the three keys to win, like pound the rock. And I think if you would have told me the Bengals are going to run it almost 40 times, I would have said they're going to get 160 yards.
Yeah. you should against a team that is, I mean, it shouldn't even matter. Even if it's a great team, you've got to be more successful than that. This was the fewest yards per attempt that they've had in a game since December of 2012, and far and away the fewest under Hugh.
Yeah.
I mean, who prides himself on imposing your will when you have to with the running game.
Right.
And has an offensive line that should be able to do it. Of all these injuries we talk about, it ain't anybody up front.
Yeah.
And you still have Ryan Hewitt is healthy.
Yeah.
You have both your running backs.
And arguably the strength of Tyler Kroft is as a run-blocking tight end. I mean, that's what he's been in there
for. And you're bringing in a first-round pick as part of your jumbo package.
Right.
But yet, it has not been consistent all year. And that's why, you know, they've got to find a way because...
Yeah, defense and Adam Jones on a return.
What people quietly were not realizing was that they were choosing this whole year to continue... What Dalton was doing was carrying this team because they had to get the numbers they were getting out of him offensively.
Right.
Because the running game was never delivering what it needed to. I mean, they were struggling to run the football when Dalton was throwing it all over the lot and everyone's back in deep cover shells.
You mean they're missing a potential MVP quarterback?
Yeah, they are. It's apparently a big loss.
Shocking.
Real quick, before we get off the Jeremy Hill topic, I do want to bring in a little bit of his sound from after the game and a few interesting thoughts on some things. Anyway, good to hear from him and his feeling on where this team is at and kind of where he's at with some things. So here's Jeremy Hill from after the game against San Francisco.
The reasoning behind you not playing at all in the first quarter, what happened with that?
I guess you ask the coaches, not something I'm...
It wasn't any kind of disciplinary action?
X Marvin, Q.
Okay. Was that thing where... Once you finally do get in, kind of come out with a little bit of what? How did that affect you? I mean, when you're not used to missing a quarter like that, was it easy to get back in a rhythm? Or?
No, not at all. I mean, T.O. didn't play the first quarter last week. We had one possession, so I mean, it's really not anything. I mean, it's you guys are looking for a story, but
yeah,
it's not anything to it.
It was a weird day in the running. There's a lot of attempts, but just it seemed like could never really break it open. Could you get a feel for why that was?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a little bit of everything. I think, you know, they did a good job. I think we didn't do as well as we could have. You know, I think as runners, we can break more tackles and help our team out. You know, it was just everything, I think, kind of played into their favor. We didn't make great plays. They made a lot of plays, and there's a lot of little things that, you know, we wish we can get back. Just one guy missing a block or, you know, us not breaking the tackle that could get us to the next level. So, just like I said, little things. I mean, in a game like this, it didn't end up killing us. But, you know, next week we definitely can have that type of running performance.
Still, Jeremy, what does it mean for you guys just to lock up the playoff spot and control your own destiny for that?
Well, it definitely doesn't feel like we did. I think, you know, there's probably not a guy in the soccer room who's happy about this, even though we won. It doesn't feel like we won. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I think the level of standard that we hold ourselves to at the end of the day, it needs to stay that way because we know, you know, playing like this, it won't get you where we want to be. So, you know, none of us are happy or satisfied at this point. And that's the way we like it. You know, we need to continue to push ourselves, you know, to accomplish what we need to accomplish.
But no turnovers for AJ. How big was that just to have him out there and just kind of manage the game the way he did?
Yeah, I wouldn't even say he managed the game. I think, you know, we ran our stuff. You know, we just, like I said, we didn't protect him on third down. A lot of free runners running at him. You know, us not running the ball very well, a lot of third and longs. Like I said, it's a lot of stuff we did wrong, not helping him out, you know, put us in those situations. So we're not happy, but, you know, we got to put AJ in a better position so he can be successful. But, you know, he played really well considering the circumstances of, you know, the situation we put him in.
Jim, it was kind of hard to tell the fumble, what happened on that play. What was your view on how that
Oh, yeah, that's on me. I gotta. I wasn't really expecting them to be hit since I got the ball, but, you know, you got to take care of the ball. That one's completely on me. You know, I've been trying to do a better job of taking care of the ball, but that just can't happen.
It's weird, you know, this season, I mean, you're used to having a lot of games where you're breaking long ones. Is it wearing on you, or are you still pretty optimistic that maybe you feel like you're going to have those games where it's going to come back, even though we're getting to the end here?
I think for me, I'm really past all this stuff, man. I'm just trying to help my team win football games and do my job. And, you know, if it comes, you know, it definitely will come. But if not, then I just got to keep on pounding and keep trying to help my team, you know, in any way I can. So, and I'm past that. I think, you know, when you're on a team like this, you know, 11-3 at this point, and, you know, in a position to do some great things, you really don't really put yourself goals or self things or, you know, yourself trying to make incredible plays above any of that stuff because, you know, you're in a position to do bigger things. So I'm not really worried about all that stuff. I'm just, you know, trying to keep pounding and keep trying to help my team.
So after the game, the team flies back here to Cincinnati. Hugh Jackson has a while to think about it and just pretty much goes off in frustration on Monday with reporters over and with his team. I always believe that whatever Hugh tells us is basically just what he says to his
right.
team. He's very honest about that. And goes off about how the supporting cast. This AJ McCarron played fine. He did his part. He managed the game. He didn't throw any picks. He didn't create any turnovers himself and scored when he had to score. When they got the ball in short fields three times in a row, they were able to punch it in.
Right.
Whether he did or not, got him in the right fits. Can he play better? Sure, he can play better. What happened in that game being offensively disgusting as far as, you know, that second half?
Right.
It was not about AJ McCarron. And his point is the rest of those guys, the veteran guys, the guys that have been out there, have to be the ones to lift their game up to make up for losing an MVP candidate quarterback.
Right. And that's a funny thing because Andrew Whitworth said that he had that message against Pittsburgh. That was the message throughout the week. And only the defense
did it.
Actually did it.
Yeah, and that's what Hugh said when that was brought up about the defense. They did their part. They brought their game up to level, but the offensive supporting cast did not.
And some of that, I mean, I would think is, again, if A.J. Green was hurt, he had one catch, three targets. That means he wasn't open because A.J. McCarron's going to throw it to him. I mean, Marvin Jones had some targets, had some nice catches. Tyler Kroft was left wide open on his touchdown. Mm-hmm. Wide open.
Yes.
I mean, that was when it
but
looked
that's
like
a
the
good,
49ers.
I mean, that's a good hot read.
Right,
it's,
yeah.
Recognizing the blitz and seeing it and, delivering
it. But I guess
it.
What I'm saying there, though, is there were some sacks late by McCarron or of McCarron where he had great protection. And that means nobody was open.
Yeah. Or he wasn't seeing the field.
That too. Yeah, we just got back. We haven't broken down any of the twos. But, I mean, so obviously there's some issues there, but I... If he was throwing it the way he was throwing against Pittsburgh, I have a hard time believing that he totally missed all of the open guys, if there were any.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe he's only making one or two reads. Maybe that first read is AJ Green, and he can't run, and so he's not open. And then the second read is Tyler Kroft, who's not open. I don't know. But, yeah, that you got to get open, right? Most mm-hmm. of the – got to get open.
Yep. We do know that AJ McCarron throws a nice deep ball.
Yes.
The one thing that we have seen from him thus far is that he can connect deep, and he keeps it in bounds, a novel concept,
right.
Giving your players a chance. But we've seen multiple deep passes, a couple ones to Marvin Jones. I mean, the deep, very deep one to Marvin Jones was
right.
was a gorgeous pass when Marvin had a step. And both go balls to AJ Green have been right on the money.
Right.
And they have that weapon out there now, and that's good to have. But the rest of the stuff, you can't expect him to be able to see everything. And you know, we did the breakdown on McCarron's day against Pittsburgh with Chris Crocker, and he said, you know, he didn't play well. And people look at the numbers and think he played great. Well, it was a lot of soft defenses. He was missing a lot of stuff. And Chris kind of went through. He had four different plays in there of plays that were there that were wide open. That McCarron was just a beat or two late on or just didn't see it right in front of his eyes. And when you break down the tape and he's talking you through it, it's obvious. But stuff that's obvious to someone that's been in the game, but he's just not going to be at that level yet. He can only just do his part. The other guys have to lift him up, and to me, that's the running game.
Yeah, and this goes back to what we wrote about over the weekend, Paul, where the history of this is not good for backup quarterbacks in this league.
No.
Taking over this late. They don't – I mean, they can kind of finish the season, you know, get you into the playoffs. Don't really win.
No.
And people point to Jeff Hostetler because he's the only one.
You know how long ago that was? I was 10.
Yeah. 98 Super Bowl teams.
Yeah.
98 Super Bowl teams. Two have had a backup quarterback take them there. One has won.
Yeah. And the two are Vince Ferragamo, your boy.
79, Los Angeles Rams.
79.
Long time ago.
In 1990.
Yeah.
Jeff Hostetler and the New York Giants. The game has changed a bit.
Yes.
Since then. Yes. A little bit more reliance on the pass.
Yes.
Okay.
So it is. So going kind of circling it back to what we started here, where it's like, how do they win in Denver? Because they kind of have to. Because at least right now, the thought is Andy Dalton can come back. And you know, so while that thought is there, and whoever at Paul Brown Stadium believes it, they need the bye.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he can come back, they need, and maybe he can get the cast off and, you know, after the Baltimore game and actually can get a week of practice and, like, get back to throwing the ball. Kind of a big deal.
And, you know, let's not even talk about, if you're talking about playing the percentages, there's a chance that not winning this game means A.J. McCarron starting your playoff game.
Yeah.
We're not, I mean, you don't know. We don't know.
Right.
How close? I mean, you would like to think that Dalton's going to be ready for a playoff, but you don't know.
No.
I mean, it's right on the cusp. So let me ask you this. Can the Bengals win the Super Bowl if they lose a Monday night?
No.
Assuming they don't get the bye. Assuming that Denver doesn't choke it up against San Diego in week 17.
No.
No. I don't think so either. I think their only route to the Super Bowl is a win on Monday. I don't see any other way they do it.
Yeah, they need...
I mean, winning three games in a row, and then you throw in all the injury stuff
right. That's
already out there, and Dalton feeling healthy, and then we haven't even talked about the gorilla in the room. That they'd be back in the first round of the playoffs again in the same spot that they have the last 4 years.
Right. And you know, talking about New England and all that stuff. Yeah, no, what's the joke is I don't know math. I don't understand math, but I believe in it.
Yep.
And it's really, really hard.
It's hard.
To not get a bye. I mean, yes, it's been done. We understand
that. Absolutely, it's been done.
But it's usually not done with backup quarterbacks.
Yes.
And all of your other really good players being dinged up.
See, I went through the numbers of the divisional round, so the difference between, you know, having to, A, win a game in the first round, and then B, win a game in a divisional round, 75% winners in the last 6 years in the divisional round are the home teams with the bye. Now, people remember the run of the Packers and remember the run of the Ravens.
Because it doesn't happen that often. That's why you remember it.
You remember it. But those are very much rarities. And especially in recent years, the last 3-4 years, it's been the 1 and 2 seeds have been the ones moving on. They've been utilizing it's been big. And I just... This is a playoff game, I think, essentially. It's a playoff game with some hope on the back end. It's not the finality of it isn't the same
right.
as a playoff
yeah,
game.
Because
I like this. The finality of it, but the reality of it
right.
is the difference. The reality is it's a playoff game. That it probably eliminates them from the Super Bowl if they can't win.
Yeah, and it really just sets them up terribly. Going back to all of the other injuries, because look, this defense kind of crawled its way back in the top 10 total defense because they're playing these bad offenses and things. But Vontaze Burfict, back on third downs for the first time all year, makes an immediate impact in that regard. Granted, we know it's a bad team, but still, obviously the Marvin Lewis and Paul Gunther felt it was necessary for him to do this for the first time. If George Iloka is healthy, and Sean Williams, for as well as he's played in relief of Iloka, is sort of now this other guy you can bring in, you know, certain situations and pass defense with perhaps Pittsburgh. You know, that's what you want. You want Adam Jones being healthy. You want Leon Hall being healthy so he doesn't have to, you know, see what we saw in Arizona when Adam Jones missed.
Yes.
Where at the end of the game it was like, oh, let's pick on Leon Hall.
Yes.
You know, so I think this defense, if you look at the rest of the AFC, and we can get into this because believe it or not, they're the only team that's really held Antonio Brown in check this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think they match up well if they're healthy, and I think they get that bye. You know, even if A.J. McCarron has to run that offense in that first home game, a healthy defense helps that situation.
Yeah, and, you know, the Steelers, if they were the 6 or the 5 going to New England, I mean, that's a game that the Steelers would be rolling in there feeling pretty confident in.
Yeah, they would. And New England has lost home games.
Absolutely.
In the playoffs.
I mean, the way the Steelers are playing right now, they're as dangerous as anybody. I mean, look what they've run through in recent weeks.
Yeah.
They've beaten the best in the league. New England's only one really amongst the top they haven't beaten.
Right.
So, you just can't, there's every turn of every conversation we talk about, the stakes on this game get bigger on Monday Night Football. I mean, and it's probably bigger for Denver than the Bengals. Because of the possibility that they don't even make the playoffs and all the other stuff, how much they're reeling right now.
Right.
I mean, they're trying to hold on to their division for dear life as Kansas City charges through their garbage schedule. So just a lot happening. One thing you mentioned I do want to pull out. You mentioned Vontaze Burfict now being on third downs. I want to bring in a couple of things, conversations that were had with Tez, who's much lighter in the pocket. Right now, after he got fined almost $70,000 for the incidents against the Steelers. That's a lot.
It's a lot of money.
The total fines in that game went over $145,000. 9 fines for over $145,000. Mike Mitchell got hit for $23,000 for the hit on Tyler Eifert. I mean, Burfict for 3 separate incidents. DeCastro and Gilbert both for the fight at the end with the eye gouging of Gilberry. A.J. Green had $11,000 for punting the ball, punting A.J. McCarron's ball.
Right.
A.J., anyway, lots of fines. But anyway, Tez has been, since he's returned, his season is a storyline.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been something with him every week, and the latest this week was his return to third downs. You talked to him before the game about how he hadn't been on third downs.
Right.
And we talked a little about him after your game about making plays and some of those coming on third down. So here's a little bit from Bengals linebacker Vontaze Burfict.
Marvin and Paulie G talked about third downs and wanting to improve those things. When you're asked to do that to improve the third down, is that just an execution thing?
I'm not in on third down.
Okay, I was just saying it in general. Okay.
That's E-Man and Vinny. And then that's how it works.
If you guys look at the numbers from last week, you did everything. I mean, the longest ball was 31 yards. They only averaged 3 yards per rush. The only thing was third down.
They're both I'm first and second down.
I know. I'm
going to ask you anything. Vinny and E-Man, they got to hold it down. They're great linebackers as well, and they're great coverage linebackers. So, you know, we just execute our abilities to who we have on our team. And E-Man, you know, he's a great cover linebacker.
We think you might expand your role.
Possibly. I think they're waiting for the playoffs, but we'll see what happens.
How you feeling as far as maybe playing 90? Because back in the day, you play 90% of the snaps, but obviously physically you're probably not there yet.
I didn't have training camp like these other guys did, so you know my body does get a little bit fatigued. But the Bengals have been helping me, you know, just sitting out of practice and stuff like that, just to do more rehab and more cold tub and extra stuff in my body to keep me up to date. coach always says, find your inner energy to find it to just keep you competitive. And I seen Navarro making a couple plays. I'm like, oh, man, I got to turn up now. So I use his plays as my energy. And, you know, he had a great game, so I feel like I had to have a great game as well.
How about Chino? Chino seemed to, when he's playing like this, tough dude to block.
Yeah, you know, Gino's 120 right now. You know, he's flying on pedestals, and, you know, I think, what is his, 10 sack this year?
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like he's going to possibly get 15, you know, so we'll just keep, every week, we'll just keep practicing and getting better.
You had two big plays in the first half. You had a sack off the blitz, and then you had to pick at the end.
Yeah.
Can you run through those plays? What happened there?
The blitz, just G caught one of our blitzes that we practiced during the week, and we seen how San Francisco was blocking it, so you know, he just didn't want me to show up on the line, come from depth, and the running back looked at me, scanned out to the nickel that was blitzing, and picked up Leon, and nobody blocked me. I was like, oh, Christmas present.
Yeah. And then the pick was almost, I guess, was kind of a pick present too, right?
Yeah, it was. You know, I have corner help outside of me, so I allowed him to go to the corner to Dre. Dre hit him, ball popped up. It was so slow, I was just thinking like, damn, can I jump for it? And I just jumped for it, and I happened to have it, and then I got to try to run for it. Dre's telling me, come on. I'm like, block behind me. Next thing you know, I felt somebody on my back.
So, yeah, we were talking about third down this week. It looked like you played more third down.
Yeah, I did. What was the percentage on that?
They didn't get that third down until the ball ricocheted off.
Yeah.
Okay. It was 2 minutes left.
Okay, well. Oh, damn. That's pretty good. G told me before the game, we're going to try to get you on the nickel a little bit more because we didn't do good on last week, so. You know, I guess when I'm in on nickel, I guess it works pretty good.
What were you trying to do in nickel with them? What were you keep things in front of you?
Our defense that he was calling, I had to tie in most of the time, you know. So, you know, we were running a lot of man. They like to run F angle Y out. So, you know, G knew the scheme, and G would put us in great place for the super call.
Did you guys figure with the guy making his first NFL start that it was guys had to come a big help him out?
Man, AJ got the most confidence in the world. This whole week he's been just carrying his shoulders up high, not feeling like he's a second string. And, you know, he showed that today. He showed a little confidence. And there were some balls that, you know, I felt like he took a sack, and I think it was better than taking a sack and throwing a pick. So.
But how characteristic was this kind of opportunistic defense you guys can be? I mean, so you came up with the play just when they were ready to kind of get out of their front, make a play. You guys kind of get to take the ball back right there. Really opportunistic today.
Yeah, that was our mentality, to go in there and get turnovers. You know, they have a great quarterback, but he likes to throw the ball when he's under the rest. And, you know, we have a great D-line that's going to make him throw the ball when he doesn't feel like it. So we just have to be ready to break on it. And, you know, it's just defense. We played a great game today.
You guys seem to be playing with confidence. Every week you get confidence. I mean, teams don't score on you.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's playing with each other. Nobody's, you know, pointing fingers. If you mess up, you say it's your fault. Next play, you make up for it.
So, I mean, the Bengals and the – see Burfict play 86% of the snaps against San Francisco.
Yeah.
Clearly, along the same lines we talked about with Adam Jones, feeling that it's time for this guy. We're going to need this.
Yeah.
We're going to need somebody. We need other people to start making plays without Dalton here. You know, the kid gloves are gone.
Yeah,
you know, it is time for everyone to step up and treat it and start playing games like it's the playoffs, because it's that time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's funny because Marvin Lewis on Friday, you know, we asked him about Tez and not playing third down. He's like, well, two things. One, we didn't need him to. You know, we felt Emmanuel Lemire and Vinny Ray were getting the job done. And he said, second, you know, Marvin actually came out and said he doesn't think a player's healthy from a microfracture surgery until that full year later. And then what happens? 48 hours later, Pauly G goes to Vontez and says, guess what? You're playing. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense, because if you fast forward, do you really want him playing his first extended snaps like that at Mile High Stadium?
No.
Especially when he admitted, hey, you know, I still get tired. This is his ninth game. You know, everyone else has played, you know, 13 plus 4 for the most part or whatever. So.
And he's you know, still dealing with his knee. I mean, he takes Thursdays off.
Right.
He doesn't practice on Thursdays pretty much, right? I mean, it's been routine.
Yeah.
His knee is – he's listed on the injury report with that knee. I mean, it's still a thing that's bothering him.
Right. And he misses – he was – the wind knocked out of him. I'm doing the air quotes, everybody. Wind knocked out of him. I mean, he dinged the knee in Cleveland. He dinged his neck against Pitts. I mean, he's, like, he gets, also –
he's on the ground every game, right, at least once or twice.
So – it made sense to me, I guess. Now, what was interesting, what he said there was, well, he didn't think he'd get dialed up like this until the playoffs. And so it's like, okay, well, that obviously shows you what the coaching staff felt about San Francisco.
Right.
In terms of what they needed him to do and help with. And
they needed to ramp him up for Denver. Right.
And it worked.
It did.
Because the 49ers couldn't do anything on third down.
Mm-hmm. And the two plays by Burfict were instrumental. I mean,
yeah.
Especially the, you know, his ability to be around the ball so often, he finds himself in plays like that a lot. I mean, his ability to chase and know where the ball is going to be, a lot of times it pops up and ends up in his hands,
right.
and things like that.
And the health thing, I think what's, for me as a first-year scribe covering the team, I asked you about Vontaze Burfict and watching him at full strength on a game-to-game basis, like, who is this dude? What is he really like, right? Because I didn't see it. I only knew about Crazy Vontaze, all the fines and stuff from out of market. Well, he broke down the sack, which was a blitz by Gunther, and he said that the key, and this is Tez describing, you know, the key was to he had to come from depth, you know, force the running back to go somewhere else, and he had to have the makeup speed to get to the quarterback and finish it, and you know, you got to be healthy enough to do that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and for your coordinator have confidence in you that you can kind of play that game and make that blitz from yards away and all that stuff. So I don't know. It made sense for him to do that because, yeah, against in Mile High, hey, run out there for 90% of the snaps for the first time in that thin air.
Thin air, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's probably good that they pushed him a little bit, see how he reacts and, you know,
yep,
could be ready for it.
Yep, very, very defining game for this team, which everyone has discussed is the sense of urgency is everywhere. You've got contract years coming up.
Right.
You've got, you know, the deepest roster with the potential to have that special run has done a lot of different things all year, and this is the team, you know. This is the year it was all right. Supposed to be coming together. Well, it all seems to come to a head on Monday.
Right. Which you kind of saw coming, you know, 6 weeks ago, yeah. But it didn't look like this, that's for sure.
But a lot more has been thrown on top of it. I mean, it already we kind of thought was going to be the game for the bye.
Right.
It is, but there's now so much more riding on the bye and all these other things that we're talking about. Whereas 6 weeks ago, if you'd have told me, can the Bengals win the Super Bowl from a 3 seed, I'd have said, yeah, I think that they can. But I just think everything that's happened, it's just changed things.
Yeah.
It's just changed things right now. So we're excited about that. The Denver trip should be fun. Team will go out there early again. Treat like a West Coast trip, so they'll go out there a day early, and then you'll have Monday is just going to be a long wait for that game. In Denver. I'm sure we'll find ways to amuse ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm excited about getting in early on Sunday, so Sunday night in Denver. I've been to Denver, but I've been there in the summer. I went to a Rockies game or whatever, and a couple, but it kind of in and out. So I'm excited to kind of have a full day to spend in Denver. We'll have to find some fun stuff to do.
Yeah.
Anybody that listens, I've
never been there either.
Yeah, if you've ever been to Denver, you have any good suggestions, things to do, fun places to eat, drink, watch football, not watch football, whatever. Holler at us because we're looking for some. So jaggy. Unbelievable. So Skinny and I, of course, if you listened last week, Skinny came on the podcast as we wanted to do once the Jags got within one game of me winning my bet. So there we were in San Francisco as the watching the Atlanta Falcons go up 23-17, and the Jaguars get the ball with 2 minutes left and two timeouts, the chance to go and win my bet for me as the pregame is happening. I mean, I had to run down, do the Bengals radio hit, come running back down to come see the rest of this game finish, and they get 3rd and 10, and a man running wide open down the middle of the field. Bortles sees it. Throws it up there, and he overthrows him by like 2-3 yards. It was ball game. It was 6 right down the middle. This all happened during the national anthem. So we're standing next to each other, and I'm just having to bite my lip and watch as the day unravels. And now the Jags are going to have to go win on the road. They're going to go to New Orleans or to Houston. They have to beat Brandon Whedon.
Well, hey, Brandon Whedon got it done.
Brandon Whedon did get it done. Oh.
And here's the great thing. Okay, so we pride ourselves on taking you inside things. So, as you all know, this has been very amusing for me throughout. So we're in the press box, and it's early, and we're watching the game.
Oh.
And the Jags are about to go in for a first half score late. They get time added to the clock. Goal to go situation.
Oh.
Picked. And there's the fat guy running down the field.
Oh.
And Danner and Skinny are going nuts. Skinny's running. He's running down the press box with the fat guy. Everybody's screaming. And the whole – people got to understand this. The other side of the press box is all like the local media and like people there early are just looking at us with this – like, why?
Why
are these people from Cincinnati caring so much about this Jags game? And then
that's in the second quarter.
C. Trent Rosecrans are just, tears are streaming down our face because, it was so jaggy. Bortles makes a tackle, but no, because they had the time added to the play before. So it gave the Falcons a chance to get a
field
goal.
That was the game. They lost 23-17 at the very least. It's -3 for the Falcons, +3 for the Jags if he just doesn't throw that dumb pick on the 1 yard line. If he takes a knee and kicks a field goal, it's 20-20 and you're going to overtime at the end.
This was hilarious. So all this was happening. And what's even better now is Paul is starting to accumulate Jaggy Christmas presents.
Very excited. And I've got a Steve Berline starting lineup now.
Original edition.
It's a real nice touch. So, anyway, let's move on and think about getting out of here soon. Do you want to do a couple Twitter questions? A shout out to our hardcore BBPers that we love so much.
Yeah,
let's just squeeze.
Ran
two
into
or three.
One at the airport. I should have got his name. I'm gonna shout out to you, sir, and your wife for seeing me at CVG, saying you listen to the BBP. Loving that I had a nonstop.
Yeah.
Wondering if Paul Danner's like in the middle of several connections. So thumbs up to you, sir, for bringing up our favorite travel story.
Yeah. That's great. I'm glad you enjoyed that one.
All right. Well, I don't know how many.
Did we get many?
Well, I directed all playoff questions to you.
The playoff scenarios are fairly simple at this point. I mean, the Bengals are going to end up in. They would have to lose to Baltimore. If they lose to Denver, and lose to Baltimore, they could end up with a 5 or 6. They would have to end up, it appears at this point, with a better record than New England in order to get the one. I've been asked about the New England tie possibility a couple times. The playoff machine, no matter what we do, continues to spit out New England winning a tiebreaker between the Bengals and them. But strength of victory is, I believe, what it's coming down to, it appears. So,
who would have thought that the Jets, pretty much, right? Isn't that pretty much the difference for that whole strength? Like, the AFC East has been garbage for so long. It's basically because the Jets decided to win some games for once.
The Jets decided to win some games. Kansas City is winning games. Yeah. Pittsburgh's winning games. Too. I mean, you've got some of the 5 and 6 all of a sudden now, are looking real formidable. Just because we don't have enough riding on the Bengals getting a bye with this Denver game.
Yeah. So I guess the one question I have here that kind of fits into the running issue, fits into the Tyler Eifert issue. From Mike Bolton, not the Grammy winner, at Mike Bolt 007. With Tyler Kroft, you see the Bengals moving to 2 tight end sets and using Geo more often for McCarron. And I guess I'll start with they ran a lot of 2 tight end sets anyway, because I consider Ryan Hewitt that in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
especially when they weren't running the I formation. I mean, it was essentially a two tight end set.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's going on with Jeremy Hill, I don't know if it bleeds into Denver. I think if they think Jeremy Hill's going to win them the game, that's what Hugh Jackson will do. But I do think, yeah, I think we're going to see. You called this a couple weeks ago, Paul. I'll give you credit. You thought it was time for Gio to kind of be the bell cow down the stretch. And I was like, nah, I don't think so. And I think he kind of wore down a little bit Sunday, but I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe Gio is the better option for this quarterback as a guy who can kind of, you know, be around. And
yeah, I was trying to go through reasons why they would possibly – why he was starting was we were trying to figure out if it was a punishment or not. And I thought, well, maybe he's better – and he is better catching the ball out of the backfield. And if you're going to have a quarterback that you know might be dumping it off a lot, that you know might be running more screens with, you might be doing that type of thing, Gio would maybe be a better guy to have back there with him. We'll see what they think their scenario is to try to beat Denver. But, you know, I think they're open to trying just about anything at this point. However they think it sets up, whatever they do, it's not going to be easy because Denver is just going to get after you.
Right.
And that's what their defense is.
Along those lines, Jason Barron at JBarron02 asking about Tyler Kroft in general in terms of how he's sort of come along. Especially with Tyler Eifert being in and out for the last 3-4 weeks.
Yeah. He's come along, I think. You know what? I think he's handled the situation pretty well. And, you know, they've liked the way that he's been able to block. And I think they've been really happy with that aspect of his game. And now he's starting to show himself in the receiving game a little bit. Obviously, getting your first career touchdown will help you out in that. And right. Made some plays. And, he's not Tyler Eifert. Very few are, but I think he's proven to be a serviceable backup at this point. And I think there's a thought that he's going to improve as he goes by. But yeah, it's been a good little run for him.
Yeah, the people want to know what's going on with James Wilder and his Christmas presents. I don't really know either. No. Ask James.
Yeah,
he might respond to you.
Yeah, he probably will.
You know what? I'm going to bring this up. Just because it bothers me so much, and maybe we can put it to rest. Tom Hecht at Brewster28 asking about benching Russell Bodine and moving Clint Bowling to center.
Yeah.
I'm not picking on you, Tom, because you're not the only one.
No.
It's kind of been a pet peeve of mine since I've been here.
People have been talking about this since, like, the third game of Bodine's
Clint
career.
Bowling does not play center. He hasn't played center. If he's played center, it was high school. He didn't play a lick of center at Georgia. No, he didn't. I looked. He didn't play center. He didn't. I looked. I'm telling you, he didn't play center. If he did, it's like buried somewhere, and it was like a couple snaps.
Yeah.
And I think this goes back to him taking some like backup snaps when he was like a rookie with the Bengals.
Well, it goes back to when Mike Pollock was here last year, and Pollock had played pretty well at guard filling in for Clint, and Bodine was struggling. Why don't you put Bowling and Pollock next to each other out there? And, you know, Bowling's played pretty close to every spot. At least he played up and down the line. And there was a thought that he would be able to play center if he had to in a pinch. It'd be ridiculous. There's so much that goes into being the center on an offensive line, and this guy's been doing it now for 2 straight years. Even if he's struggling at this point in a season, to throw a new center into the mix for A.J. McCarron is probably not the best idea.
Right. And I know, Tom, and again, we're not picking on you. You're just sort of the embodiment. Look, this is like, you know what, Paul? This is like when I get pickles on a cheeseburger when I said no pickles.
Oh wow! Like Tom. You gone far.
It's one of those things where it's not what you did in the one moment; it's the culmination.
It is of your entire life of people just thrusting these pickles into your face when you don't want them,
right? And that's the question of just Clint Bowling can play center, and it just bothers me. And I understand offensive line is this weird thing; people don't understand it. Even like Pro Football Focus does their thing; people don't understand that either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Marvin Lewis is mad that you think you understand it, Paul.
I know.
So,
hey, listen.
He's not playing center. Clint Bowling's not going to play center.
No.
He's not going to play center next year.
No. They can go find a new center, maybe.
That may be.
But it ain't. It's not moving guys around on the line.
No.
I don't think. No. And he's a great guard. He's one of the best guards in the league. He's a top 10, 15 guard in the league.
Yes.
And you're going to move him out of that position.
Right. So earlier, Paul was giving me a look because he doesn't believe me when I say Clint Bowling didn't play guard at center. So I will look this up again and tweet it later. But I'm 99.8% sure I went through his bio.
We'll talk to Clint.
At his Georgia bio, his official Georgia bio, and the games he played, none of which said center.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. But I will agree with you that any bit he did was not much. If it was, it was reserve fill-in if someone got hurt in a game or something right. like that or whatever. He did come out.
Played left tackle.
He came out known for his versatility. He played all over the line.
But not center.
And there's no reason for him to come and play center.
So anyway.
Sorry. Now that you've gone off on one of our loyal listeners.
I'm sorry, Tom.
It's not you.
It's not.
It's Jim.
It's not Tom's fault.
Jim's just an angry person sometimes. I think it's all catching up to him. And you made him think about the whole Pickles incident, which
such
really
a disaster.
Riled him up. Listen, do not. If you ever are in a situation where you have to make a sandwich for Jim Ozarski, whatever you do, do not put pickles on it. He will lose his mind. He is very sensitive to this and
yes.
not very tolerant of this. So anyway, on that note, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, have a great holiday.
Yeah, we love all you people that listen to the BBP. And we're excited about this week and really the rest of this year because everything we've been doing all year is culminating in it's going to be a lot of fun to help bring you everything that happens as this crazy season comes to an end, whenever it does come to an end. But want to wish everybody that listens a Merry Christmas from Jim and I and the BBP. And I feel like since it is the season, you know – it's and where we're going to Denver, it's going to be cold as hell. They're already projecting in the teens.
Ugh.
I mean, it feels like a snow game, you know, doesn't it a little bit? It feels like
sure.
a snow game to me. I feel like we're going to get some snow in Denver on Monday night. And you know what? It's that time of year where I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. I'm kind of dreaming of a white Monday night football.
This is my favorite Christmas song.
Is it?
Yep.
See, I.
But who are you?
What is your version? You probably have like a Wu-Tang version.
No.
You love.
Bing Crosby.
Oh, old school.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Old school Bing Crosby. So, from Jim and I to you, and all the way to those in Denver, we're gonna drop out a little bit of White Christmas for you. Thanks to all of you for this year for listening to us on the BBP. And we'll catch you next week. Take it, Bing.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. Of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your day be merry and